Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, the role of vegetables on our plates has changed a lot in the last 40 years. And our next guest has been part of that vegetable revolution. Oh, man. Farmer Lee Jones is with us. He is the Chef's Garden. He is with the Chef's Garden in Ohio, a farmer who's been in this family business for decades. They're reviving heirloom vegetables and growing unusual new varieties in sustainable ways. And he has a new book out. It's a great book. It's called The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables. And some are calling it the Vegetable Bible. It's as large as the Bible, for sure. And we're going to talk with him about how the family farm changed over the last few decades, get some suggestions for new ways to look at veggies. And certainly we want you to join in. What would you like to know about growing the best vegetables? What questions do you have about sustainable farming, perhaps? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Farmer Lee Jones, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Larry, thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Well, I tell you what, you have a beautiful book. Oh, there! I was struck when I first took a look at it. Why did you decide we needed a reference book like this, and such a beautiful one at that?
Well, you know, I think that the vegetable is having its day, and it's emerging as we move towards a plant-based, plant-forward future, and that is inevitable for sustainability of society. We have to look at vegetables, and I hope that the book inspires people to consider using vegetables they've walked by in the grocery store and said, I never saw mom cook that, and I don't know how to cook it, but, you know, that it inspires them to grab the celery root or grab the salsify or grab the watermelon radish or the black radish or the ninja radish and give it a try. And I hope that the book breaks down barriers of intimidation. And, you know, as well, unless you've lived under a rock for the last couple of years, you know that there's a 40% food waste in America, and I think that's understated. And we really kind of look at the plant in different ways. We believe that at every single stage of the plant's life, it offers something unique to the plate. And so opening people's minds to considering a plant at a different stage than they've eaten it before is something that we're trying to do as well.
Yeah, for sure. How your family farm turned into the Chef's Garden is really an extraordinary story. Tell us about it.
Well, we're in an amazing microclimate, 2.9 miles inland from Lake Erie. Lake Erie is the shallowest of all the Great Lakes. Consequently, it's the warmest. It was huge in wine grapes even before Napa Valley. European settlers recognized it as a great growing area. There were 330 vegetable growers in this county alone in 1930. But as roads and refrigeration continued to improve, one by one, those small family farms, just like those family-owned grocery stores that we all remember as a kid. Go back in your mind and think about the family-owned grocery stores that were in your hometown that are no longer there. Well, the same thing happened to the farms because it all happened on a bigger scale. Chain grocery stores came in and larger farms in big, big volume, big scale. And so one by one, the farms were pushed out. My dad was a little more progressive. He invested in hydrocooling, packaging, palletization. He worked cooperatively with other growers in our county to be able to give them enough volume. As roads and refrigeration started to improve, outside competition came. And as it did, you had to have more volume to be able to supply chain grocery stores. He had some very good years. They worked hard. When I was 15 or 16, my dad was farming 1,200 acres of fresh market vegetable. If the listeners remember, and if they don't remember, maybe from the history books, our famous Secretary of Agriculture of the United States, Mr. Earl Butz, his famous message was get big or get out. Well, and that's really what happened. But also another little known factor, we kind of get lulled to sleep, but interest rates today are about 3.5%. Late 70s, early 80s, they hit 22%. My dad got wrapped up in 22% operating borrowing money, borrowing operating capital at 22%, selling to Kroger and Pick and Pay, and they paid in about 120 days with no interest. So basically, we were borrowing it at 22, loaning it to Kroger and Pick and Pay for free interest for 120 days. And then we had a hailstorm on top of that, and it broke their back. And I stood shoulder to shoulder with my mom and dad. I was 19. I'm the oldest in the family. My mom and dad, my brother and sister, all of our neighbors, all of our competitors, everybody that was there to celebrate our failure, and they auctioned off every tractor, every piece of equipment, the land, my mother's car, and our house, and it was gone. And we started to back over at farmers markets, which were at a historic low. Ironically, today they're at a historic high, which, hallelujah, we're reconnecting finally with where the food sources are being grown. So that in a nutshell is sort of a really quick whirlwind of 40 years of trials and tribulations. And we put those in the book, and our failures, and our tribulations, and hopefully a few of our successes as well.
You know, Charlie Trotter, Chef Charlie Trotter, was a graduate of the University of Wisconsin.
You may or may not.
Yeah. And so he is kind of on my mind, but maybe talk about Charlie Trotter, or just talk about how you got to be working with some of the finest chefs certainly in the United States, in the world, really.
Well, at the farmer's market, we met a European-influenced and trained chef. Her name was Iris Balin, and she was searching for farmers that were willing to grow without chemical, grow varieties for flavor rather than tons per acre. And everybody at that kind of time in history of agriculture in the United States was like, yeah, no. And we were desperate for a way to survive in agriculture. We grabbed around both of her ankles, and we wouldn't let this lady go. And we said, teach us. And she did. And she introduced us to a chef, and then another chef, and then another chef. And then Jean-Louis Paladin at the Watergate Hotel, highly touted French chef. And then he introduced us to Daniel Ballou and Alain Ducasse and Jean-Georges Wong Richten. And then finally, Charlie Trotter and Thomas Keller. And Charlie Trotter, Thomas Keller, those folks did more for us. 816 West Armitage in Chicago. Charlie Trotter did so much for us. He loved vegetables. He was ahead of his time with a prefix menu of vegetable, in the 80s. And there is not a day goes by that we don't miss him. And Thomas Keller has done so. I hate to start naming chefs because they've all taken us under their wing and given us a path and a direction to go. And that has worked great. We've worked hard at it. There's 150 families full-time that work here on our little 350-acre farm up until, March of 2020. And that world changed a little.
Yeah. And you supply directly to some of those fine chefs, or many of those fine chefs.
We do. And we don't go through any middlemen. What's really cool is our inventory is growing until a chef orders it. When they call it, we go pick it, we pack it, we wash it, we clean it, we ship it, and they have it the next day. And we've been so grateful for the help and the support and the encouragement that chefs have given us all over Vegas, New York, Chicago, Disney, Hong Kong, Four Seasons, Ritz-Carlton, St. Regis's. Just we focused on growing the very best flavored vegetables that we knew how, as well as eat the rainbow, and color is health. But they wanted sexy vegetables and they wanted flavor. The three most important things they wanted was flavor, flavor, and flavor, but do it naturally, do it without chemical. And that's what we've been focused on for 40 years.
Wow. I tell you what, it's amazing. It's an amazing story. That is for sure. Farmer Lee Jones, our guest today, and his book is The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables. And there are some unusual ones out there, and some that look different from what we normally eat, but they sure taste good. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along today. You can join us 800-642-1234. email us to ideas at WPR.org. You actually had to recreate your business again last year. Really?
We did. I mean, the restaurants were 100% of our revenue. And it was like, Larry, it was like a light switch flipped off. And yeah. We just mourn and ache for the servers, the front of house, the back of the house, the chefs, the sous chefs, the owners of these restaurants, because it's been brutal. And of course, that brutal has run downhill because we supplied those folks. And so it's been brutal here. So within a 24-hour period of really kind of getting the idea that this thing wasn't going away in a hurry, we pivoted because we thought we could help people, because we've been focused on flavor, but we also knew that we were bringing nutrient density along with it. And so we pivoted to a home delivery, FarmerJonesFarm.com. Mm-hmm. And people could order a box of healthy, nutritious vegetables anywhere in the United States. Or if they were doing okay, but they knew somebody else was struggling, we had times where people were calling in and ordering five boxes and none of them were shipping to themselves. The generosity and the spirit of the American people has never been more vivid and vibrant than it is today. And it was really fun to see people rally together we're survivors in this country, and that's what we do, and that's what we've done, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
I tell you what, having some fun talking with Farmer Lee Jones, and he's going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us. Then we'll be back with Farmer Lee Jones. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, talking to Farmer Lee Jones about sustainable farming, growing, and unusual vegetables, and his new book. It's titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables. And we'd like to have you join in the conversation. What vegetables do you like to grow? How important are vegetables to your menu? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas at WPR.org. And Mike from Ephraim's been waiting a long time, Farmer Lee. So let's go there. Mike, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Hi, Lee. Hey, this is a great topic. And congrats, Lee, on the book. I'm just curious, what are your feelings about hydroponic growth methods for vegetables, and do you feel like you get the same kind of quality as out of Mother Earth? And I'll listen to what you have to say about it. Thanks.
Thank Bye. You, Mike.
And I'm not here to knock anything that anybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. Our belief system is that we get a more nutritious product in soil. In a natural way, I know that there are some very successful operations that are hydroponic. So this is not in any way, shape, or form a knock on hydroponic, but we're trying. Our goal is to grow in soil. We have a saying, healthy soil, healthy vegetables, healthy people, healthy environment. And what we're doing is testing the soil, just like we jokingly sometimes say we're going to go out and harvest some vitamin D in the sunshine. Well, it's pretty amazing that that goes so much further than what we think. We test the soil, find out what it's deficient, and then based on those deficiencies, plant crop specific, clover, buckwheat, vetch, barley. We have a 16 species cover crop that we're planting. 2/3 of the acreage out of 350 acres is committed. It's an unprecedented commitment to rebuilding the soil. I would challenge the listeners to Google and see what's happened with the nutrient density in vegetables from 1930 to 1980. It's gone down by over 50%, and it continues to go down at an increasing rate. In part, that's because the farmers are selecting, and again, this is not a knock on farmers. They're working within the model that exists. Keep costs as low as possible, produce as many tons per acre as possible, you stay in business. But what's happened is that the nutritional levels have gone down from 1930 to 1980 by 50%, and they're going down at an increasing rate. We've been able to reverse that. Not only reverse that, but we're moving the nutrient density levels 300 to 500 times higher than the USDA average. As we move towards plant-forward, plant-based future, which is inevitable for the environment and for sustainability for people, we've got to look at the integrity of what we're growing and how we're growing it. Not a knock on hydroponic. That's our personal belief. This is just one dirt farmer's opinion. That's all.
Well, you know, here we've mostly talked about that was a great question, by the way. I appreciate that. We mostly talked about sort of the history and how you got going, and that's only a small, that's a few pages in the 600-page book. Tell our listeners what your book is all about.
It's about inspiring people to look at vegetables in different ways, from inspiring them to consider a vegetable, a way to be able to prepare it that they haven't considered, but also, unless you've been under a rock there for the last couple of years, we all know we have a food waste issue, a food waste crisis in the United States. And that's unconscionable when we think about the fact that we have people that are hungry in America. What we're doing is encouraging you. Look, the reality is there's many other countries that are much older than America. And at some point in their suffering and struggles to survive, they figured out every way to use an animal. They use the gelatin between the hooves. They use the bone marrow. They use everything but the squeal. We've been a little bit slothful in the United States. Things took off really good a couple hundred years ago. The soil was good. The farmers were good, and they did quite well, but we didn't use all the animal. I think that there's no better way to celebrate an animal's life by using it all respectfully. But I think that the same philosophy can happen. If we consider a Brussels sprout, the majestic beauty of a 3.5 to 4 foot tall Brussels sprout with these beautiful canopy of leaves just for us to harvest a little tiny Brussels sprout. It takes 10 months to grow the Brussels sprout, and all we're doing is picking the Brussels sprout off. I would defy the listeners, if they were blindfolded, to be able to tell the difference. Look, it's a cruciferous family. What's in the cruciferous family? Cauliflower, broccoli, collards, cabbage, Brussels sprouts. If you were blindfolded, you couldn't tell the difference between a Brussels sprout leaf and a collard green leaf. Why not use and celebrate that plant's life in its entirety? All the energy, all the water, all the love, all the nurturing that went into producing that. Let's celebrate. Did you know that you can actually peel the leathery skin off of the stalk and make a vegetable marrow? And Chef Jamie Simpson expresses these ways that you can look at that plant in entirely different ways than we've ever considered before. And how exciting is that? And what better way to celebrate that plant's life?
Oh, that's, and you've got a, there's a wonderful recipe in your book about just that. I looked at this lovely photo and I thought, oh man, I have got to try that. I'd never done it and looked like a pretty straightforward thing to do.
A squash. We tend to think of squash kind of one dimensionally, 7.5, 8 inches long, or maybe two dimensionally, or when we go away for a 3-day weekend and we come back and they're the size of a baseball bat. You know, so we're going to make zucchini bread, but you can actually eat the stalk. You can eat the leaf. You can eat the squash when it's the size, it's 1 inch long. You can stuff the blossom. Let's look at this. Let's explore. Let's have fun with vegetables. It's our future. Have fun. This book is to inspire a gardener, a home cook, a chef, anybody that just loves vegetables. We get excited when we get to talk veggies, Harry.
Oh, man. Jim in Rockford, Illinois has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hello. I was wondering if artificial fertilizers were allowed when you're growing organically.
Well, we don't call anything that we do organic. We think that organic minimizes what we're trying to accomplish. When you look at the definition of organic, it means the elimination of certain things from the equation. In some cases, no, it does not. You can still use those. We don't think it goes far enough. In addition to the fact that we're not willing to pay an extra fee for trying to do the right job, we call what we're doing beyond organic. Again, organic means the elimination of things from the equation. It doesn't talk about the addition of things to the equation. We want to rebuild that soil naturally through plant-based, harvesting the sun's energy. It's our personal belief, not trying to cast any aspersions to anybody else, it's our personal belief that God designed a system far superior to anything we can fake out chemically or synthetically. It's about working in harmony with nature rather than trying to outsmart it. My dad had a saying that the only thing we're trying to do is get as good as the growers were 100 years ago. And if you look at it, they weren't using synthetic fertilizer, they weren't using the chemicals, and the nutrient levels were 50% or more higher without those, and they rotated the land and they gave something back. Soil is like a relationship. How many relationships do we have where we can take, and never put anything back in? And the soil's the same way. We're all about rebuilding that soil. Healthy soil, healthy vegetables, healthy people, a healthy environment.
And again, I might bear repeating for people who might just tuning in, and you've got 350 acres, if I'm not mistaken, but right. a pretty large chunk of that is going into rebuilding the soil.
It's two thirds of the soil, and 350 acres might sound like a big amount to folks, but we're a flea on the end of the tail on the end of the dog. We're surrounded by farmers that are farming 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 acres. You get out west, it's 20 and 30,000 acres. So when you figure 350 acres and then two-thirds of it committed to rebuilding the soil naturally, it's even smaller yet. 150 full-time people working on harvesting 100 acres of vegetables. It's all by hand. We're trying to do it. We're old school. In many ways, you might come and see us doing principles and practices from 100 years ago, but yet we also believe in technology. We put a laboratory in. We have three scientists on staff where we're testing the soil, testing the nutrient density, testing the nitrate oxides. Our goal is to have the healthiest vegetable humanly possible. We don't have it all figured out. We've got a lot of room to get better.
Jim, I thank you again for your question and comments. Gianni in Montello, let's go to you now. Hi, Gianni.
Yes, good afternoon. Great show, and I'm enjoying the program. Listen, I have a question for your guest today, and it might ruffle some feathers along the way, but it's a very direct question, and here it is. In the last 75 years since the Second World War, is big agro and factory farming responsible or partially responsible for our healthcare crisis in the United States? And I'm talking about diabetes, heart disease, kidney failure, whatever.
Yeah.
Can you comment on that?
Well, absolutely it is. And I hope we do ruffle some feathers. It's time for us to wake up and see what's going on. We allowed, and it wasn't something that was, I think, intentional by farmers. I think they're a product of the environment of the demand. Look, after World War II, we recognized we were a two-income household. And that allowed the crack in the seam. Because before that, and it was gender-specific, at that time, it's not today, could be dad staying at home and mom at work or whatever. But back then, mom was tasked with coming out of the home and building submarines, machine guns, army tanks. And then she went to work and it became a two-income household. Then you guys remember the frozen TV dinners? My mom thought it was great. They were terrible. The frozen Salisbury steak and the instant mashed potatoes and the frozen peas and carrots. Absolutely. There's a correlation. Look, okay, get in your mind this chart. 50% decrease from 1930 to 1980, and then we changed the way that we were farming. And then take the other chart that I'm going to give you in your mind, and it's going to be a 3,000% increase in kidney, liver, heart, cancer disease, attention deficit disorder, autism, childhood obesity, and allergies. So that one went, in 60 years, it went 3,000% up. The nutrient levels went down. There's no way not to think that there isn't a correlation with this. Absolutely. And let's ruffle some feathers. But I think more importantly, let's recognize it and reconnect with producers of product. Know who's growing it. Know how they're growing it. Know that there's somebody responsible on this end of it at the farm level doing it the right way. These farmers aren't bad people. They're following the model that exists. Keep the cost as low as possible and produce as many tons per acre. The chemical companies recognize this, and they say, hey, we're going to help the farmer. What do? They give grants to the university, and then there's a few strings attached. And by the way, the research they do needs to be research that includes their chemicals with GMO'd products. So now they've reduced the cost for the farmer because they plant a GMO product, they spray something on that kills everything that is alive other than the genetically modified, and they reduce the cost. Absolutely, there's a correlation. I love your question.
Thank you, Gianni, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I still want to give, I want to make sure our listeners have an idea about the book, because so you've got a collection of wonderful vegetables in the book, and this is 600 pages, by the way. So this is quite a lovely book. And then you've got associated with the book many, many interesting recipes that involve the plants that you're talking about.
Well, Chef Jamie Simpson, who works full-time here on the farm, he's the chef liaison at the Culinary Vegetable Institute that our family built 22 years ago. And he works there and traditionally works with about 600 visiting chefs a year that come in and do research and do menu development at the farm. And he works between the farm and the chefs to let them know what's available. And he works with them and helps do menu development. And it's evolved, obviously, over the last year. But, you know, and he'll say to you, if he were on here, he would say, look, if there's some of the pieces of equipment that are asked to be used in this, in these recipes, just avoid them and go use them, use the equipment that you have available. And it's really not about intimidating you. It's about opening your mind to being able to say, hey, I can tackle the salsa fee. I want to try this. It's really about having fun and inspiring you to play with new vegetables.
Well, I've got a question relating to that, and thanks for giving us one of the recipes that we can post up on the Larry Mehler Show page. It's fried cauliflower with Thai chili jam, and it sounds absolutely wonderful. I got to thinking, I went to look in my refrigerator, and I found I didn't have Thai chili jam, but I had jalapeno pepper jelly, and
yeah.
I thought, I'm going to ask Farmer Lee if I could use that.
And that's just the point. Look, at recipes are just a jumping off point. Have fun. You know, you don't need us to tell you how to cook. These are just ideas and inspiration and creativity and saying, jump off the deep end and have some fun. And that's what it's really about. Experiment, play, and have fun.
Oh, and if as you listen, you can get a copy of that. Go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry and go to today's program. Click on today's program. You'll find it in the notes. The recipe for fried cauliflower with Thai chili jam. And it looks just gorgeous. Oh, it looks wonderful. I'll tell you that for free.
Man.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. You've talked quite a bit about food waste, and I would like to offer a suggestion for eliminating household food waste. We have a backyard chicken flock, and any food scraps or any food that gets away from us goes in the pen, and the girls love it. We have an organically grown garden, and we any parts of the plant that we don't eat, they do, and any that they don't go into the compost pile. And in the fall, we fill the pen. We do it's called a deep litter, which is we fill the pen about mid-thigh high with leaves and then add a bale of straw from time to time for the girls to scratch through. And they poop on that all winter long, and then that goes into the compost pile in the spring, compost over the summer, and is used, is gathered in the fall and is used for starting our plants for the garden in the spring.
That's great.
It's brilliant. I love how you think. That's exactly the kind of thing that we want. We have a neighbor that has several hundred acres of popcorn. He has a byproduct of corn cobs. Now, back in the day, Larry and I knew what those corn cobs used to be used for. We could have made a lot of money in 2020 if we'd have been smart. But our neighbor was paying to haul these things away. Well, we put up 4 acres of 50 plus year old greenhouse on the best piece of ground we had. We put 2 boilers in. We now give him $26 a ton for the corn cobs he was paying to haul away. And we ran 1 million foot of tube through the ground, and we heat the whole greenhouse with a renewable energy of the corn cobs. And I love what she's talking about. It's full cycle. Look for every way to explore all the materials that are available to us without having to use the fossil fuels. Brilliant. Love it.
Oh, thanks so much for that comment. Appreciate it. Oh, I've got an email from Kevin Chesso, one of our extension agents who appears on the show. And he sent an email to remind me that UW-Madison's Dr. Julie Dawson's collaborative research project, it's called Seed to Kitchen Collaborative. And it looks specifically at the kind of what we've been talking about today. So if you get a chance to Google in Seed to Kitchen Collaborative, you're going to find out all about it. So thanks, Kevin, for letting me know on that or reminding me. I knew about it. I just hadn't thought about it in a while. Well, so what are you harvesting right now, by the way?
We are harvesting wintered over spinach that we have a trademark on called ice spinach. We're harvesting carrots. We have wintered over. We've replicated root cellar conditions. So we have candy stripe beets, gold beets, red beets. We're harvesting asparagus in three colors. We're harvesting heirloom lettuces. We're harvesting probably about 300 different products right now. Rhubarb has started. It's just edible flowers, squash with blooms. It's endless.
So anybody in under your current system now, an individual can order and probably online. You've got this wonderful website. I love the website. Talk about it for a minute and then how people can order and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we thought that it was something that we could do to provide value during the crisis of the pandemic and beyond. But we curate recipes and boxes that may have a theme to them. And you can go on there at farmerjonesfarm.com and pick the box that suits you. And you can add on things that might not be in the box that you're interested in trying. But the recipes certainly lend towards the products that are available. We kind of built the recipes, we just let Mother Nature dictate the order in which we put the book together. And as Mother Nature provided the products, it's kind of a walk through the garden. Every day it offers something new. We're harvesting ramps foraged right now. We have black radish and ninja radish and watermelon radish that are still in our root storage from last fall. So it's really kind of that blending, merging type of time where we still have some winter crops left and the spring crops are finally evolving.
Oh, it sounds great. Well, are you going to keep with this system? Are you going to, I mean, what's the future of the Chef's Garden?
Well, it's a great question. We've been asked that question a lot. Look, you know, we were really in trouble when the restaurants closed down and we felt like we were providing a service by offering the product. But the reality is it was just like in any relationship, folks that were ordering these boxes helped save our farm. And it would be unconscionable to think we were going to pull out on them after they've kept us afloat in the last year. We recognize it as a miss. We'd always wanted to. We just hadn't had time. And so we're building the system in that we can do both. And we drug out and resurrected an old roadside stand that had been repurposed 40 years ago as an irrigation shed. And we dug it out of the backwoods and cleaned the wasp nest and the fox den out of it. And we power washed it, gave it a coat of paint, put a new roof on it. And we put it out beside the road and we opened up to the community. And the community has supported it. And they're just elated that they can get fresh vegetables right from the farm. We're not going to stop that either. So, yeah.
Well, you've got a wonderful book here, Lee, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really enjoyed talking with you. Hopefully, we can do this again. I hope we can talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Hey, if anybody wants to follow on Instagram, Farmer Lee Jones, or The Chef's Garden, we'd love to have you follow them and keep us posted on what you're doing. So long.
Thank you. Farmer Lee Jones, The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables. That's the title of the book. It's a jaw dropper, I'll tell you that, when you take a look at it. It was a lot of fun talking with him. And it'll be fun talking tomorrow with the author of The Vegetable Garden Pest Handbook. She'll offer some natural solutions for solving pest problems. That's on Garden Talk starting at 11. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.